No. Good afternoon, everyone. Glad you stayed behind for the second part of the day, where we continue the series that Robin has started last month, and we're going on a different topic today. Last month, Robin introduced us to the topic of the occult, and just to remind you, when you think of the occult, you don't have to think about voodoo and speaking to the dead. It's not only that. It's a broad term that defines anything that is trying to paint a picture in our mind of God, of Jesus, that is different from the one that we find in the Bible. So it's more to do, it's got more characteristics than just simply a ritual or something traditional. Today we're going into the topic of music, and what we're going to discuss today, there's a lot of information, but we're not trying to tell you what music to listen to. We're not trying to impose any criteria for membership in the church, but we're just trying to inform. Actually, this whole series is not about forbidding something, but about making you aware of the dangers behind what is going on in this world. And music is a very interesting topic, and it's a very important topic, because at the moment, I think music is affecting us more than anything else. Because music is everywhere. Wherever you go, there is music. There is music on the radio, there is music in a shop, there is music in the supermarket, everywhere. And music is being used for different purposes. For example, did you know that in shops and supermarkets, there has been research done to determine what kind of shopper the supermarket or the shop wants, and then they improve your shopping experience with music. There are shops that will always play lively music, yeah? That's because they want you to go through the shop very quickly. It's not so you leave, but it's because they're expecting high volumes of people coming to buy from there, so they want you to make your decision quickly. There are other shops that will always play slow music. You know why that is? Because after many, many psychological research studies have been made, they came to the conclusion that if you're in a space and there is slow music in the background, you will go slowly, you will buy more. So music is everywhere. Music is used for different purposes. Before that, as you know, I'm not very good with PowerPoint presentations, so you'll have to believe me if I say something and it's not there. Dr. David Elkind noted in his book, The Hurried Child, one of the most underestimated influences on young people today is the music industry. Then we've got Eddie Manson here, who gives a warning. Music is used everywhere to condition the human mind. It can be just as powerful as a drug and much more dangerous because nobody takes musical manipulation very seriously. I mean, have you ever walked into a supermarket thinking, oh, what kind of music are they going to play today? Now, of course, you don't really go with that in mind. You go with your shopping list in mind, yes? But in the background, there is something that dictates to your subconscious. And you're not aware of that. You don't know that. Then the National Review has to say this. Rock music's sheer pervasiveness makes it the most profound value shaper in existence today. Unless you are deaf, it is virtually guaranteed that rock music has affected your view of the world. And the reason why rock music is mentioned in many, many quotations and in many, many writings is because it is the biggest industry in the biggest share of the music industry is the rock music. The beat that the rock music is giving has dictated the tone for many other genre, and it's still the basis of everything that is going on. With rock music, young people wake up to it, drive to it, play to it, study to it, and go to sleep to it. Studies show that between years 7 and 12, the average teenager will listen to and watch 11,000 hours of rock music and rock videos, more than twice the time they will spend in class. But who is really behind the music industry? The hour for joyful, happy songs of praise to God and his dear son had come. Satan had led the heavenly choir. He had raised the first note. Then all the angelic host united with him, and glorious strains of music had resounded through heaven in honor of God and his dear son. Ellen G. White. Do you remember who was the chief musician in heaven? Who was the best one at music? Who knows how to manipulate music to sound better, to make the most of it? It's Satan. He knows that he can do things with music that might seem strange and even impossible. I feel alarmed as I witness everywhere the frivolity of young men and young women who profess to believe the truth. God does not seem to be in their thoughts. Their minds are filled with nonsense. Their conversations is only empty, vain talk. They have a keen ear for music, and Satan knows what organs to excite to animate, engross, and charm the mind so that Christ is not desired. The spiritual longings of the soul for divine knowledge, for a growth in grace, are wanting. Adventist Home. You can hypnotize people with music, and when you get them at their weakest point, you can preach into their subconscious whatever you want to say. That's what Jimi Hendrix said. If someone rejects what Ellen White said, look what this guy said. He's famous. Have you heard of him? Of course. Then, rock music is an ideal vehicle for individual or mass hypnosis. Then, John Fuller. Rock music in particular has been demonstrated to be both powerful and addictive, as well as capable of producing a subtle form of hypnosis, in which the subject, though not competently under trance, is still in a highly suggestive state. David Winter. An incessant beat does erode a sense of responsibility in much the same way as alcohol does. You feel in the grip of a relentless stream of sound to which something very basic and primitive in the human nature responds. Rock music is powerful and addictive and is capable of producing forms of hypnosis. But now, most of you might say, well, I'm not listening to Metallica, I'm not listening to U2, I'm not listening to Aerosmith, AC/DC, all the other rock bands. So, why is this of any interest to me? I come to church every week, or whenever I can. I try to listen to good music, and I'm not affected by this. Why should we talk about this in an afternoon seminar? And the reason why we do talk about it is because my presentation today is going to concentrate more on the influences of rock music, which you've just seen how manipulative and how dangerous it is, and the way it infiltrated Christian music, which, when you listen to it, might sound clean, kosher. Yeah, it's good to listen to. It talks about Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. But actually, the influences that are behind it draw us to the occult in the outside music. It's called contemporary Christian music. And on this topic, we get into the danger area of this contemporary Christian music. I think this is a great danger for both young and adult Christians. It's not only for the youth, but it's for every single age. Every single person in this room can be affected by the influence of rock music in Christianity. And we just want to raise some warnings today. It's interesting that there is so much music out there that is called Christian, and we allow it to come into our homes, but instead of doing us good, it's actually preparing many of us for the worship of the beast from Revelation 13. Every song is making a doctrinal statement. There is no such thing as a Christian song that is harmless. A Christian song should make a statement. Look at every song and check to see if what's in it goes along with what it says in the Bible. If there's a single, even minor, doctrinal error, then it's not good. The Bible says that our teachings have to be 100% truth. Now, there are many who don't understand why anyone could be opposed to contemporary Christian music. Is it not the music that's played on most radio stations, TV stations, Christian TV stations? It's found on CDs in Christian bookstores, and it's even used in churches across our conference. So it must be good. Is singing about Jesus and grace not lifting God in praise? How could something so popular and sincere be wrong? And people have misconceptions as to why someone would oppose contemporary Christian music. They think that those who oppose that kind of music must be legalist, extremist, a danger for the society and church in general, racist, mean-spirited, or they just simply don't like to have fun and they want to stop others from having fun as well. But the real reason for the opposition is far from that, because even those who prefer traditional music like new things. Many of those who like traditional music use smartphones, buy new clothes, buy new cars. They like stuff that is new. They like new things. So it's not a matter of liking only old things. So the argument doesn't stand. But we're talking about religion here. When it comes to religion, we have a completely different situation. The newest part of the Bible in our Christian faith is 2,000 years old. Bible truth is not contemporary, and it will never be considered cool by the world unless it is distorted to suit what we want to hear in our days. If you go back to the days of Jesus, we can actually see that Jesus ministered in a society where people were asking for a distorted message. They did not want to hear about God's love and loving one another and the end of the world. All they were interested in was political justice and judging others. They despised tax collectors, prostitutes, those who were not Jews, and anyone who would not fill the holy pattern imposed by the Pharisees. They did not bring offerings to the temple from the best of what they had at home, but instead they would walk to the temple and use the merchants there to buy something for the offering and bring the sacrifice a few meters away. So people didn't believe in what the message of God was actually saying. Did Jesus come with a new commandment to love God and love one another? Certainly not. It's found in the Old Testament as well. But the people of Israel, along with their leaders, have watered down the message of God to say only what they wanted to hear. That's why Jesus had to repeat the commandment of love. That's why Jesus had to speak again about the end of the world. Because they didn't care about that. They took the word of God. They claimed that they are holding the right message from God, but actually they were only teaching what was pleasing them. It's the same these days when many people consider that the only way to bring people to church is to dilute the message. And it's called, the method is called same message, contemporary methods. Now, let's look at how it evolved in history. It started with Paul's words from Romans 3:28. For we hold that a person is justified by faith apart from works prescribed by the law. And also Ephesians 2 verse 8. For by grace you have been saved through faith, and this is not your own doing, it is the gift of God. And there have been in the past many beautiful sermons on this passage. However, we have to simplify the text. Because if you say all those words in those two verses, people will start asking uncomfortable questions about law, about works. So let's keep it simple. Let's just cut it down. For we hold that a person is justified by faith. Jesus had to be a cool figure. So people didn't understand the deep sermons. They didn't want to listen to deep sermons. It was not what brought them to church. So we cut the text. We just stop at justified by faith. And the new type of sermon goes on to explain that faith only requires you to go to church and allow Jesus to change your life. You don't really have to go deep into the text. Just believe in Jesus, and that's enough. But this was complicated as well. So the modern preaching on the text that we've just mentioned is different from what was before. Because the bit about changing your life was not popular. Jesus had to be a person that accepts you just as you are, which is biblical. But he also knows how weak you are and knows that in order to keep you close, he has to fuel your weakness. Now it's okay to continue in your sin and carry on with your old life as long as you say that you believe in Jesus. This statement is found in one way or another in many of the Christian denominations, and the churches are full because who doesn't like the idea of living their life to the full here on earth while believing that once this life is over, they'll be saved forever in heaven? It's a win-win situation. You have fun here, you have fun in heaven. You just have to believe. Instead of us being desperate to get Jesus in the house of our heart and help him be as comfortable as possible, Jesus is the one who has to make the sacrifice. But that's wrong. Jesus made the supreme sacrifice on the cross 2,000 years ago. And if that can't convince you, then even hypnotizing you to be a devout Christian is not worth it. You know, you don't deserve it. Christianity has lost its battle with the devil the moment it started being shaped by what people like and what people didn't like. Because it wasn't about Jesus anymore. It was all about me. I'll go to church if I like what's going on in church. Does Jesus matter here? This is the issue with contemporary Christian music as well. There are so many influences from outside that you don't really know what is Christian anymore. I was mentioning about the influence from rock into contemporary Christian music, and it's called Christian rock, first of all. Now, as I said, when I mention Christian rock, I don't refer only to Metallica or AC/DC style music, because I don't think anyone is listening to that from among us. But there is also softer music that has been influenced by that. Music that sounds innocent, but it's hiding under the umbrella of peace, love, and freedom for all. And it's actually a cult. Listen to what the website Ranker.com, a specialist website when it comes to music, has to say. Over the past few decades, Christian rock has been one of the fastest growing genres in all of music, as this comprehensive list of the top Christian rock bands shows. Some of the genre's biggest groups dominate the radio in certain markets. In the heartland of America, many Christian rock bands outsell and outperform some of the biggest names in pop. Though the contemporary Christian music doesn't get as much attention in the mainstream as it does elsewhere, this particular brand of rock has resonated with fans that like the message that religious music sets forth. So, is Christian rock considered something that's not worthy of paying any attention to? No, it's actually outselling and outperforming pop bands and pop music in many parts of America, and not only America. And among the list that this website is presenting of Christian rock bands and artists, we find popular names that we might have heard about, like Hillsong, like Michael W. Smith, and it even includes U2. Let me give you an example. Most of you have probably heard the song My God is an Awesome God by Michael W. Smith, yeah? Well, the tune is very catchy. So you probably haven't listened to the words properly, to the lyrics properly. So, other than the "My God is an awesome God" bit, there is something else. This is how it starts. "When he rolls up his sleeves, he ain't putting on the Ritz. Our God is an awesome God," in the background. "There is thunder in his footsteps and lightning in his fists." Is this why God is an amazing God? Because there is thunder in his footsteps and lightning in his fists? Is this the image of God that you get from the Bible? Is this the image of Jesus that was presented on the pages of the New Testament? Well, I would associate this image of the God in these verses more with something I find in the Bible, and tell me if there is any resemblance. "The whole world was filled with wonder and followed the beast. People worshipped the dragon because he had given authority to the beast, and they also worshipped the beast and asked, 'Who is like the beast? Who can wage war against it?' Then I saw a second beast. It exercised all the authority of the first beast on its behalf, and it performed great signs, even causing fire to come down from heaven to the earth in full view of people." Now, which God resembles more the God in the song? Is it a true God of heaven? Or is it this one who makes great wonders and miracles and even brings fire down from heaven? A sincere evangelical pastor, Mike Hoggers, has made the following statement. "Listen carefully to the lyrics in Christian contemporary music. There is no definition of the God you are encouraged to worship. There is no sound doctrine in the song. It is actually a song that can very easily be played outside of a Christian context if you just simply replace Jesus or Lord with baby honey. Contemporary Christian music is so popular, and it was designed in such a way that at the time of the rise of the Antichrist, wherever you find the name of Jesus, you can replace it with the name of the Antichrist and give him all the glory that should go to Jesus." And this is not a Seventh-day Adventist pastor. This is an evangelical pastor. Last time Robin presented a definition of the occult. Okay. And it said, anything that involves dealings with the world of spirits or of supernatural forces which are not focused on Jesus as he is revealed in the Bible. Now, we applied this criteria to the song before. In the above mentioned song, is Jesus more like Superman or the Jesus that we find in the four Gospels? Thunder in his footsteps and lightning in his fists. Yeah, I think it's Marvel Comics, actually. Now, here comes the problem. Because I don't think I should have done that. Okay. Here comes the problem, because this type of music is played all day long on the radio, TV stations, internet, and on CDs. It has become the type of music people like. Again, people were taught what type of music to like. It's a type of music that gives you that feel-good attitude and that willingness to believe in Jesus for a few moments. It triggers some emotions in your body that you didn't even know you can have. And then you come to church on Sabbath and you sing the boring hymns from the hymnal, and you're looking forward to the time when you leave so you can listen again to your favorite music, because that's true Christian music. So it's no wonder that even many of the Seventh-day Adventist churches have fallen into the trap of making a church in our likeness, willing to adopt anything from the outside as long as it keeps people entertained. And we always blame the young people when it was us who pushed them into the trap all along. There is Christian pop music, there is Christian folk music, there is Christian blues, there is Christian all sorts of music, with only a couple missing. And I'm looking forward to the day when I'll have the chance to listen to Christian tango. And I want to see how that will sound like, to hear how that will sound like. And I want to see how people will dance on Christian tango, because you can't just listen to it. Contemporary Christian music is worldly. A reason why there are worries with regards to contemporary Christian music is because it is worldly, meaning it is not separated from the world as the scriptures demand. 1 John 2:15 to 17. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passeth away, and the lust thereof. But he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. Ye adulterers and adulteresses, know ye that not the friendship of the world is enmity with God? Whosoever therefore would be a friend of the world is the enemy of God. And be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. And have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them. When Israel broke down the walls of separation and failed to make a distinction between the unclean and the clean, the holy and the unholy, God judged them and said, "Her priests have violated my law and have profaned my holy things. They have put no difference between the holy and the profane, neither have they shewed difference between the unclean and the clean. And they have hid their eyes from my Sabbaths, and I am profaned among them." This is an apt description of the contemporary music philosophy. It puts no difference between the holy and the profane. All music is holy, it boasts. Nothing is profane. All dress styles are holy, nothing is profane. God is the God of everything. Go and do whatever you love doing. Just like last time we've heard from Aleister Crowley, "Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law." The worldliness of contemporary Christian music is seen in that the contemporary music itself borrows from the world's sensual rhythms. Contemporary Christian music openly and proudly uses any type of music in the service of the Lord and refuses to separate from music that is openly used in the worship of the flesh and the devil. What is worldly music? Worldly music is music that sounds like the music used by the world for sinful activities. John defined the world as the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life. Music that is characterized by these things in worldly music, and that is certainly true for blues, jazz, rock, rap, reggae, and other forms of modern dance music. This type of music has an intimate association with immorality, drunkenness, drug abuse, gambling, prostitution, and other evils. And it is impossible to disconnect the music from this association. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll is not just a popular saying. It is a true saying because they go together like peas in a pod. The chief component of the aforementioned types of music is the heavy backbeat. It's called the anapestic beat. This is a poetic term that describes poetry using three syllables with the emphasis on the third. Da-da-da, da-da-da, da-da-da. In music, however, the anapestic or backbeat emphasizes the offbeat. The anapestic rock beat goes 1, 2, 3, 4, or 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. This is in contrast with a straight or march beat, which has the emphasis on the first beat or on each beat equally. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. This backbeat is the chief characteristic of pop music. Consider these quotes. "I feel that if I could take a tune and drop the first and third beats and accentuate the second and fourth and add a beat the listeners could clap to as well as dance, this would be what they were after. I think that rock and roll music, it has a backbeat. You can't lose it. When they play their music, oh, that modern music, they like it with a lot of style. But it's still that same old backbeat rhythm that really, really drives them wild. It's the beat that gets to you. If you like it and you feel it, you can't help but move to it. That's what happens to me. I can't help it." That's what Elvis Presley said. The rock musicians themselves describe their music as being sexy, and they claim that the sex lies in the heavy backbeat. Consider just a few examples of this. Irving Sibley: the great strength of rock and roll lies in its beat. It is a music which is basically sexual. I'm Puritan. The great strength of rock and roll lies... The throbbing beat of the rock provides a vital sexual release for adolescent audiences. Rock is visceral. It does disturbing things to your body. In spite of yourself, you find your body tingling, moving with the music. Rock music has one appeal only: a barbaric appeal to sexual desire. We respond to the materiality of rock sounds, and the rock experience is essentially erotic. Dr. David L. Kind said this: there is a great deal of powerful, subliminal sexual stimulation implicit in both the rhythm and the lyrics of rock music. A punk rock manager said this: rock and roll is pagan and primitive and very jungle, and that's how it should be. The moment it stops being those things, it's dead. The true meaning of rock is sex, subversion, and style. And observe that most of these statements do not refer to rock music in general, but to the rock backbeat in particular. And that backbeat has been also taken into modern Christian music. It's the same backbeat that characterized all of the streams of music that fed into rock, including ragtime, boogie-woogie, jazz, honky-tonk, and Caribbean. Dan Lucarini is a former contemporary praise leader, and he says this: I'm now convinced that God will not accept our worship when it is offered with music styles that are also used by pagans for their immoral practices. He's a jealous God. If you grasp this principle alone, it will change forever the way you lead a worship service. Then, a former rock and roller: how do you understand what good Christian music is? It ought to sound different from the rock station, the easy listening station, the entertainment music. When we sing gospel songs in the good old-fashioned way, they don't sound like anything that the world sings. That's the way we need to keep it. We can never portray the peace of the Lord with wild, discordant, violent sounds. We can never speak of the love of God with hateful music, the goodness of the Lord with bad music, the majesty of God with low-class music, the power of God with puny music, the wisdom of God with stupid music, the holiness of God with unholy music. We can never speak of godliness with ungodly music, or heavenly things with earthly, sensual, and devilish music. And we can never speak of being a soldier if we use dance music. Contemporary Christian music does not merely unhesitantingly borrow from the world's music. It actually boasts of doing so. There is no sense of separation, no sense of sacredness and holiness. They even use secular rock in worship for God. During the February 18, 2002 premiere show for the Michael W. Smith and Third Day Come Together tour, the group Third Day took to the stage the music of New Age Beatles song Come Together. That's how they started the concert. Last time, you remember about the Beatles? Well, they have been one of the most godless, wicked influences in modern society. Now, in 1965, John Lennon, in his book A Spaniard in the Works, called Jesus Christ many wicked things that we cannot repeat, and blasphemed the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And in Lennon's song God, he sang this: I don't believe in the Bible, I don't believe in Jesus, I just believe in me, Yoko, and me. That's reality. So, a song that was composed and sang by the Beatles is used to open a Christian music concert. The worldliness of contemporary Christian music is seen in that Christian contemporary musicians are not separated from the world in the way they live. Roaring Lambs, A Gentle Plan to Radically Change Your World by the late Bob Briner, with an introduction by Michael W. Smith, is a book that has been promoted widely by contemporary music musicians. It promotes the idea of being like the world to win the world. Briner suggests, for example, that Christians should have the goal of seeing our sons and daughters become the principal dancers in ballet companies, instead of looking upon such things as wrong and immoral. Briner says, instead of just hanging around the fringes of our culture, we need to be right smack dab in the middle of it. So it happens to be talking about the same artist, Michael W. Smith, that we spoke about early. But after all, he's one of the most popular Christian rock artists, and his music is played in many churches today. To promote his first crossover hit, Place in This World, Michael W. Smith produced a video that was central enough to reach the top 5 on the secular rock cable television station VH1. It showed a dreamy Mr. Smith singing and playing the piano in the middle of the desert while a young, gorgeous woman wanders around in the sand. Eventually, the two find each other, hold hands, hug, and sort of nuzzle. Smith admitted that his wife was opposed to him hugging another woman, and that his own children said that their mother should have been in the video instead of another woman. On top of the video, have a look at the lyrics and tell me where you see God in the lyrics here. So I'll read it for you. The wind is moving, but I am standing still. A life of pages waiting to be filled. A heart that's hopeful, a head that's full of dreams, but this becoming is harder than it seems. Feels like I'm looking for a reason, roaming through the night to find my place in this world, my place in this world. Not a lot to lean on. I need your light to help me find my place in this world, my place in this world. If there are millions down on their knees among the many, can you still hear me? Hear me asking, where do I belong? Is there a vision that I can call my own? Now, imagine these verses. You're not a Christian, you're not listening to Christian music. You just see this on the TV station that you follow most of the day. And you hear these words, and you see the video of a man playing the piano in the desert, and a woman trying to find him, and then in the end they find each other, they hold hands and they hug. Will this take your mind to God? Is God anywhere here? No, of course not. Again, the same former worship leader, Dan Lucarini, words, when you combine the sensual dancing with the immodest dress of the women on the platform in contemporary praise teams, you place a very large stumbling block in front of the men of the congregation. He goes even further in his book. We took teens to concerts given by popular contemporary Christian music artists. These were not the radical heavy metal or hip-hop artists, but the middle-of-the-road performers who seemed to be good role models. But we noticed that the artists, probably under the influence of their recording companies, imitated secular artists in music, concert performance techniques, dress, hairstyle, and merchandising. Everything seemed to be geared to making money by winning fans. The poor teens were manipulated in the same way as when they were listening to their secular teen idols. They were hooked in the beginning by safe, careful lyrics and moderate music, but the artist always progressed to an edgier, rockier, and harder music style with a lifestyle and image to match. And the teens followed along. The contemporary Christian music artists became role models for different kinds of immorality, indecent dress, rebellious images, improper crushes on married men by young girls, lustful interests in sexy females by adolescent males. So how can anyone claim that the worship music that is used nowadays is clean and it only instills heavenly thoughts in your mind? I've been preaching in churches where, honestly, I say that after the worship team went on the platform, I was afraid to preach. Because I was scared. I was shocked There is a church where I preached, and I've got the recording on my computer. If I would play the recording to you, you would be in shock as well. I think it was a choir, and there were about three or four lead singers who simply shouted there. There was no music there, but they were so happy about what they've done. It doesn't prepare the atmosphere for a sermon. And unfortunately, that's the case in many churches these days. But the biggest danger in contemporary Christian music is that Christian contemporary music is ecumenical music, taking us again to the idea that this type of music can very easily be adapted to worship the Antichrist instead of the rightful receiver of our praise. In an interview with Christianity Today, Don Moen of Integrity Music said, "I've discovered that worship music is trans-denominational, trans-cultural. It bridges any denomination. 20 years ago, there were many huge divisions between denominations. Today, I think the walls are coming down. In any concert that I do, I will have 30 to 50 different churches represented." Contemporary Christian music was the music of the largest ecumenical charismatic conference of the last quarter century. This was New Orleans 87, held in July 1987. Approximately 40 different denominations and groups came together under one roof, including Episcopalian, Church of Christ, United Methodist, American Baptist, and so on. 50% of those in attendance were Roman Catholics. Roman Catholic priest Tom Forrest delivered the closing message and brought the mixed multitude to their feet when he called for unity. And he said this, "We must reach the world," he cried, "and we must reach it the only way we can reach it. We must reach it together." And those words, the people became ecstatic, leaping to their feet, shouting, stomping, speaking in tongues, dancing, hugging one another. At the book sales in that New Orleans concert festival, one could purchase rosary beads and Madonnas to assist in one's prayers to Mary. A Catholic mass was held every morning during the conference. The music that held all of this confusion together was contemporary Christian music. There are so many instances when the Roman Catholics have joined forces with the evangelical musicians and have united everyone under the same flag. Music is so easy to use to manipulate people that human beings don't even realize that they've been dragged in a game where there is no truth, there is no Jesus. It's all about love and unity. It doesn't matter that our music is not sound from a biblical point of view, as long as it speaks about what we like. As long as we repeat the same words over and over again and we can hold hands, it's all okay. We can even accept whoever is worthy of being a leader to be praised for facilitating such a reunion. Anything is possible if you use the right music, and the occult world knows this and is using and abusing our minds. Gordon Sears was right when he said, "When the standard of music is lowered, then the standard of dress is also lowered. When the standard of dress is lowered, then the standard of conduct is also lowered. When the standard of conduct is lowered, then the sense of valuing God's truth is lowered." So as I said in the beginning, today's presentation was mostly about the dangers that are around the corner from us. Not from what's outside, disturbing others, but what's here in our own yard. Here, no evil. Thank you. Amen.